each plant in the grove had produced 35 to 40 flowers, standing proud on fleshy green stems as thick as a man's thumb. Under Duke's unremitting glare, they had acquired a spectral lemon-yellow corona. The four of them walked a little way down the mown grass between the rows. Careful pruning of the bushes had ensured that each flower was fully exposed to the sunlight, none of them overlapped. Joshua pressed his toe into the wiry grass, feeling the solid earth. "It's very dry," he said. "Will there be enough water to fill them out?" "It never rains at midsummer," Louise said, "not on the inhabited islands, anyway. Convection takes all the clouds up to the poles. Most of the ice caps melt under the deluge, but the temperature is still only a couple of degrees above freezing. It's considered frightfully bad luck if it even drizzles here in the week before Midsummer's Day. The roses store up all the moisture they need for fruition in their roots during springtime." He reached up and touched one of the big flowers, surprised by how stiff the stem was. "I had no idea they were so impressive." "This is an old grove," she said. "The roses here are 50 years old, and they're good for another 20. We replant several groves each year from the estate's nurseries." "That sounds like quite an operation. I'd like to see it. Perhaps you could show me. You seem very knowledgeable about their cultivation." Louise blushed again. "Yes, I do. I mean, I will, she stammered. "Unless you have other duties, of course. I don't wish to impose." He smiled. "You're not," she assured him quickly. "Good." She found herself smiling back at him for no particular reason at all. Joshua and Ivy had to wait until late afternoon before they were introduced to Grant Kavanagh and his wife, Marjorie. It was an opportunity for Joshua to be shown round the big manor house and its grounds, with Louise continuing her role of informative hostess. The manor was an impressive set-up. An unobtrusive army of servants was employed to keep the rooms in immaculate condition, and a lot of money had been spent making the decor as tasteful as possible. Naturally enough, the style was based prominently on the 18th-century school of design, history's miniature enclave. Thankfully, William Elphinstone left them, claiming he had to work in the groves. They did, however, meet Genevieve Kavanagh as soon as their carriage drew up outside the entrance. Louise's young sister tagged along with them for the entire afternoon, giggling the whole time. Joshua wasn't used to children that age. In his opinion, she was a spoilt brat who needed a damn good smack. If it wasn't for Louise, he would have been mighty tempted to put her over his knee. Instead, he suffered in silence, making the most of the way Louise's dress fabric shifted about as she moved. There was precious little else to absorb his attention. To the uninitiated eye, the estate beyond the grounds was almost deserted. Midsummer on Norfolk was a time when almost everybody living in the countryside helped out with the weeping rose crop. The travelling Romany caravans were in high demand, with estates and independent grove owners competing for their labour. Even school terms — Norfolk didn't use didactic laser imprints — were structured round the season, giving children time off to assist their parents, leaving winter as the principal time for studying. As the whole tier crop was gathered in 2 days, preparation was an arduous and exacting business. With over 200 groves in his estate, not counting those in the crofts, Grant Kavanagh was the most industrious man in Stoke County during the days leading up to midsummer. He was 56 years old. Modest gineering had produced a barrel-chested physique, 5 feet 10 inches tall, with brown hair that was already greying around his mutton-chop sideboards. But a lifetime of physical activity and keeping a strict watch on what he ate meant he retained the vigour of a man in his 20s. He was able to chase up his flock of junior estate managers with unnerving doggedness, which, as he knew from sore experience, was the only way of achieving anything in Stoke County. Not only did he have to supervise the teams which went round the groves setting up the collection cups, but he was also responsible for the county's bottling yard. Grant Kavanagh did not tolerate fools, slackers, and family sinecurists, which in his view described a good 95% of Norfolk's population. Cricklade Estate had run smoothly and profitably for the last 270 years of its distinguished 300-year existence, And by God, that superb record wasn't going to end in his lifetime.